Welcome to Shasta County Elections, presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. Today we have in the studio one of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors District 1 candidates, Aaron Resner. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, good to have you here. Now, you've been keeping yourself pretty busy the last 5 years, or a section of the 5 years, serving on Reading City Council.
Yeah, I served on Reading City Council from 2018 to 2022, and then I ran again to complete a partial term of Michael DeQuisto's from 2024 to 2026.
Awesome.
So I cycle off at the end of this year.
Ah, excellent. So I always like people to know the background of the person that's on the program. So where did you grow up?
I grew up here, actually. Yeah. They call me a boomerang kid. So we're the kids who were from here. We go away to college and then we come back here. I always knew that I wanted to come back here. It's a beautiful place and we have incredible schools and we just have really incredible people. And I always knew that I wanted to raise a family here.
Yeah. Yes. So thinking about when you went off to college, where did you go and what was your focus?
This is sort of funny because nothing that I do now, it really is what I went to school for. But I think that that's very typical of most millennials. So I left here and I went to UC Santa Barbara. And then
it's a beautiful location.
It is a beautiful location. I had a blast. I had a lot of family loss during my second year and decided that I wanted to be closer to home. And I transferred to St. Mary's and I finished with at St. Mary's with a BS in biology. So
Science.
Big science nerd over here. It is really funny anytime that I serve on boards that that sort of thing comes, that sort of thing inside of me comes out. But it makes sense. I think that when you know that, it makes sense when you look at my decision making.
Yes. And if you think about it, the focus on science, society is a focus of science as well.
You know,
we call it a sociology or psychology, but it is also about the whole science field is about humanity.
Yeah.
Systems,
people. I think I've just always been a curious person and why does that happen and why does it work like that and how did that come to be? And I've always naturally, I think, been a person who was curious.
I think it's great, too, that you knew you were going to come back here.
Yeah, I just thought that it was great, which is also why in 2018, one of the reasons why I decided to run for city council was that I knew that I really wanted my kids to feel that same level of pride. When I left for Santa Barbara, yes, of course, it's such a beautiful place to be, but I was so proud of where I came from. And I loved growing up here. I had a really great life and I went to Foothill and I loved it. And so I really wanted that same thing for my kids. I really wanted Reading and Shasta County to be this place that when they left, they were really proud of. So I wanted to give in any way that I could to make sure that I could help that happen.
And hopefully make the decision to come back as well.
Yes, I would love if they were boomerang kids.
Yes, it's a wonderful message when somebody says, I think I'm going to move back to where I originally came from.
Right? I feel like it means that we did a good job. And
and
we travel a lot so that I can give them all sorts of perspective. But I think that that too has helped them understand, wow, we come from a really great place.
Yes, yes. And the other thing I like to ask people, especially the candidates, have you served on in the past in commissions or boards or, you know, whether it's a nonprofit organization or state organization?
Yes. So prior to being on city council, I served in a variety of different ways. And then once we're on council, we are given liaison assignments. So maybe I'll mix the two of those.
That sounds perfect.
Maybe I'll just list a couple of them. The three that I think are probably the most impactful for me, prior to being on council for over a decade, I was court-appointed special advocate for Youth and Dependency Court. So advocating inside and outside of the courtroom with foster youth.
I bet that was rewarding and probably challenging too.
Yes, it is very demanding It is very moving, and it is also very rewarding because our social workers are just very, honestly, they're very overworked. They have huge caseloads and they're doing their very best. But the beauty of a CASA is that you stay with that one child for the lifetime of their case while they're in dependency court. So sometimes I was advocating for what they needed in the classroom because I had ed rights on one of my kiddos. And then sometimes I'm just advocating for where it is that they want to be or something that they want to do or making sure that their attorney hears their voice. Mm-hmm. And so that was really rewarding. I had everything from babies to one of my very first ones was a teenager who aged out of a group home. And that was a very interesting process. So yeah, I've seen all of the hurdles and all of the difficulties that come with foster care and social work and experienced that for somewhere between 10 and 15 years or so. And then I was a founding board member of the Children's Legacy Center. I no longer sit on that board, but again, similar sort of work in terms of needing what just the needs here within our community and that integration between social work and law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for about 7 or 8 years. And then the other one I'm the former president of the Northern Sac Valley Division for the League of California Cities. And I think that one was so interesting and so rewarding because it really cemented this belief in local control, because that's the entire premise of the League of Cities. So the League of Cities advocates for local control at the state level because we are in fact the best decision makers for our community, and what works here doesn't always work somewhere else. Yeah. And honestly, what happens pretty frequently is the state makes these decisions and then they want counties and cities to implement them. But metropolitan decisions don't always translate to rural communities. So,
and probably more often than not don't.
Frequently they do not translate really well. And so it was helpful to be able to talk to other rural communities, yes, of what was working and to get to brainstorm with them and then to be this collective that was advocating for local control.
Yes. And is that a statewide organization?
Yeah, it's a statewide organization. Honestly, it's a lobbying entity. And at the time that I was the president of the Sac Valley Division, every city within California had a member who was a member of the league. And so those cities paid a membership fee. And then we all advocated. There may be like 6 regions or so, but then we would tackle causes or we would lobby the state, maybe in terms of public safety. That was one of the commissions that I served on. There was lobbying the state of what could we do, because Prop 47 and 57 are things that electeds talk about up and down the state, blue cities, red cities.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Any city.
No. Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned those 3 different organizations, and working with children and families and that whole system is really foundational to the health of the community.
Yeah, it is. If you want a healthy community in 20 years, take care of its children.
Absolutely. They are our future, literally.
They literally are our future. And so if we can be proactive and make sure that we're taking care of them when they are small, then they're healthier adults and contributing members of society later on.
Yes. And you know, you with the League of California Cities, Sac Valley Division, I can imagine that oftentimes you're bringing out the needs of this particular region, not only Redding, but the whole region. It's very different than if you're in a metropolitan area.
Yes, it's very different. The hurdles that we're attempting to overcome or to get over in Northern California versus if we were in Newport, mm-hmm, or if we're in the Inland Empire area. Those are just very different. Access to things, distance, size of a city. It used to be, ages ago, it used to be some of us that were in wildfire areas, but now that's really the whole state of California. So we're having all of us having those conversations, but lots of conversations about how do we bring our communities the things that they need.
Do you think it's important for people to serve on boards and commissions?
yes, I actually think that it gives you such great perspective, and it gives you that boots on the ground sort of experience. I grew up here,
mm-hmm.
and I went to school here. I went to St. Joseph's and St. Francis before I went to public school, and being a member of the faith community, just how I grew up was that you give back mm-hmm. and you pitch in and you help. So that was sort of just the part of the way in which that I grew up. It was natural for me, but I've learned in these city and elected positions that I have a different level of insight because of that nonprofit work.
Yes.
I have that sort of insight and experience of boots on the ground and communication between people who are doing like the actual work and what they are experiencing and ideas that they have
mm-hmm.
and not just as policymakers. Cause like I said, in the league situation, there are policymakers who make decisions that don't necessarily always translate to the people
yes.
who are implementing them really well. And so I think that nonprofit work gives me very interesting perspective and it gives me a lot of insight.
And I do think professional nonprofit employees is very different than being a volunteer. I think it's a unique experience when you volunteer and like help be a co-founder for an organization that you're volunteering, you're putting your whole energy into. That's very remarkable, I think.
For sure. It is a different situation to say I'm giving of myself because I deeply care about this cause
yeah.
or the outcomes. Rather than to be paid. And I can tell you that in the CASA situation, that really translated to care in foster youth because we were the one person who wasn't being paid to pay attention to them.
Yes, yes.
And so for a person who has very high ACEs scores or who has experienced a lot of trauma, that was this underlying level of trust that was communicated solely because we were only there because we cared.
Yes, yes.
We were not getting a paycheck and we really just wanted to help. And so I think that communicated this level of like trust.
Yes.
And it was very meaningful, I think, to foster youth.
Yes. And I want to pause in case there's someone out there listening that doesn't know what CASA stands for. CASA stands for
Court Appointed Special Advocate.
And you talked about ACEs. What's ACEs?
ACEs are adverse childhood experiences. And in Shasta County, it's very concerning because we have extremely high ACEs score here. We are higher than the California average. We're higher than the national average. We are higher in suicide rates and in mental health. And so adverse childhood experiences yes. are something that we measure so that we can measure ourselves and the needs of our community.
Yes, and it's based upon a research project that was handled in San Diego by Kaiser Permanente years ago. And I mean, they invested a great deal of time and energy. It's 10 questions that people fill out, but
right.
so critical because it tells us if your ACE score is above X, then we certainly need to get intervention involved so that you can have better health outcomes as you age.
Yes, the first time that I was exposed to ACEs scores was a TED Talk by, I believe, a cardiologist. Mm. And she was talking about health outcomes mm-hmm. for people whose ACEs scores are 5 or higher.
Yeah.
And I just found it really fascinating. And yes. so I had already been doing that work with foster youth. And so I started reading about ACEs scores and then helped host a forum with the Women's Fund so that we could share about ACEs scores and about health outcomes with the community. And it's been actually really helpful. It was an accident that I stumbled upon it, but it's been actually really helpful to have yes. that knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. It's critical that I encourage people, even if they never go to a psychotherapist for therapy, just check your ACE score. You can find the document online. And if it's higher than 4, seek out therapy so that you can really process the trauma from the past and be free and not have the health impact from it.
Yes, there's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Yes.
And
one of the leaders in the field, Bessel van der Kolk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very important. I want to ask you too, after college and you moved back here, what sort of employment did you have during that duration?
My husband and I have owned Dutch Rose Coffee here for over 20 years. We now have 8 stores and a couple hundred employees, and it looks very different for us now than it did. Like I said, my background is biology, and his my husband went to art school and is an incredible artist, and so it was lots of fumbling, and I'll call it failing forward. We read a lot. We failed and learned a lot to grow from, you know, 1 shop to 8. And here we are 20 years later. And I'm so proud of the way that our crew involves themselves in the community, and really the way in which that they just impact people's day.
Yes, yes. So you have an extensive background in business, as well as volunteering and working in the nonprofit realm.
Yeah, I had sort of this like crash course between nonprofit and business, and then development. It was one of the things that also motivated me was that we had built shops. We'd bought property and built shops. I was very familiar with the planning department and what it looks like to build something within the city of Reading or within Shasta County, because now we've done both of those. We have shops inside the county and inside the city.
And you've had 5 years working in government.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Yes. It's very different. I also sat on the Community Services Advisory Commission. So that's CSAC. They handle parks, open space, anything that the Community Services Department. So I sat on that commission for the city prior to running for city council.
Yeah. So you have a little bit of background in lots of diverse things.
I like a lot of things.
Good.
Yeah.
That's a benefit to the community, I'm sure. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections. It is presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm Lynn Fritz, your producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And we have in our studio today, Erin Reznor. She is running, a candidate for Shasta County Board of Supervisors District 1, currently serving on Reading City Council. And so, also, what I like to ask people, because I'm asking all the candidates the same exact question,
okay,
so that people can kind of see,
yeah,
gives a roadmap to who's running. And so share with us your political affiliation and why you chose that. How would you describe that?
I have been a registered Republican since the age of 18. And voted, I believe I'm a 4x4 voter is what they call someone who votes. I vote early, often, and all the time.
I like that.
I'm 41, so I've been a Republican for a very long time. And when I decided that I was going to pick the Republican Party, like I said, I've always been a curious kid who was facts and database and research. And the Republican Party at that time was very much so this non-emotional, fiscally responsible, making decisions based on facts and data and research and what it looked like, how things would economically play out. And they were the party of like family and supporting veterans and the military. And it's been an interesting road because I think no other time that I can recall in modern history has there been such a wide array of people that I think feel so disenfranchised on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a sad sort of scenario.
Very sad.
I also think none of us are alone in that. So I guess it's not as lonely, but I think that that exists because there's extremism on both sides of the aisle. And the louder that that extremism is, the more disenfranchised I think that the people become, which again is also why I think it's so one of the reasons why I am running and why I think that it's important to serve in our communities is that it's really important that we pick common sense leaders, people who have the ability to pick policy over party and to pick people over party.
And to work with people no matter their political perspective or alignment.
like I'm going to go back to the science thing and, yeah. and research and studying something and experiments, but there has to be someone who is asking why so that there isn't something that we missed. Yes. So I actually really love that sort of dialogue. And I think that it gives us different opinions and ideas and perspectives so that we can come to a solution that works for the entire community, for the people who live here. So if we have ideas from all groups within the community, then we can make sure that the decisions we're making are serving all of the people, because that's our job.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there will always be people that say they don't care about what I think. They don't care about how it impacts me, because truly you're looking at what's best for the community, not a particular individual. You have to.
Yeah. You have to make a decision that is best for the people as a whole. Yes. That makes decision-making hard.
Yes.
Because sometimes there are decisions that you know are going to impact people. And so sometimes you're making hard decisions that are what is best for everyone.
Yeah.
Or what might be hard right now might be really beneficial 20 years out.
And you have to have that long-term perspective.
I think that it's crucial that leaders have that long-term perspective and that they're not making political decisions for what the community looks like today. Specifically, there are sometimes in an emergency when obviously you're looking at what does today look like and what's mm-hmm. necessary for today. But really, leadership should look like making long-term decisions for the future of our community.
You know, as I mentioned previously, you've worked in business, nonprofit. You are working in business.
Yeah.
Nonprofit and government.
Yeah.
And so I know that you will interface and have interfaced with people that have very differing perspectives of what you personally may think or what yeah. you may think as a political representative to city council or board of supervisors, whatever office you're holding. So do you have a particular strategy in working with conflict? What do you do, I guess?
You saw a really great example of this play out publicly within the city of Reading for the last year or so. The last year or so, we had a lot of conflict. So yes, naturally over 20 plus years in business and lots of personalities. I also am a mother of four. So there are six people with lots of varying opinions and ideas within our household. But you really saw that play out on a public stage the last year. And my strategy is essentially, can I be calm and measured and collected in the room? Can I listen to what others are saying and then try and find some sort of common ground? Because I truly operate from this belief that we have far more in common than we do that we would disagree on. Mm-hmm. And so where can I find that common ground and then build from there? So that's usually my strategy. How do I find something that unites us and then work from there? Because it's really important that we collaborate. And so reminding everybody, just like I remind my kiddos, like, hey, same team. Yeah. We're on the same team. Because as electeds, we're all on the same team. We all want a better community. We all want what's best for the future. We all want good outcomes in our families and children and in our economy. So we're on the same team. And how do we press forward once we find some sort of common ground?
Yes.
Maybe I'll also say that doesn't mean that you will always see me appear to be passive in a room, mm-hmm. because you will see me operate from a space that, like I said, is something we do in our household where all emotions are welcome, all behaviors are not. And so you will see me say, like, hey, how we get there matters. So that behavior is not going to be okay. You're allowed to feel however you want to feel about the project or about the problem or about the solution. But how we get there matters. How we interact with each other matters. So you will see me draw a line with certain behaviors.
I think that's healthy. I think people can disagree, but disagreeing with respect.
Absolutely.
Is important, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, what a boring world it would be if we all agreed all of the time and everything was just, you know, vanilla or something. It just sounds so boring.
One of the things I share with people is that when we're with people that have a different thought than us, or really different, maybe a different culture or different lifestyle, or they're just different, that's the opportunity to learn from them.
Yeah. It's a fascinating situation and experience to simply just get to hear others' perspectives and mm-hmm. others' stories. And we can do that in a respectful way. And the beauty is that you might just learn something.
Yes, yes. I always say we learn more from our differences. You know, it challenges me to think perhaps differently than I've thought before. And it asks me to go to a different place. Rumi, I always think of Rumi. Rumi said, when beyond the idea of wrongdoing and right doing, there's a field, I will meet you there. And so we can have all these different ideas, but if we can come together, share those, even when they don't agree,
right,
that collaboration happens and we're stronger to build towards a healthier community.
Yeah. And sometimes it gives you the ability to say, wow, this is really why. This is the why I believe the things that I believe, or why I think the decision should be X, Y, or Z. Sometimes it grounds us in our principles because they were challenged mm-hmm. in a way that made us really consider all of the aspects.
Yes, yes. If you just joined us, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Erin Reznor. She is a candidate for the Shasta County Board of Supervisors, District 1, and a current city council on Redding City Council. So thinking about, we talked about all the differences, we talked about the challenges, working with conflict, you know, I think bridging, when there's lots of division, we look at a lot of national division today, and conflict that's arisen locally for division. Is there anything about bridging that or trying to help heal that or work with it that you haven't been able to address yet by our conversation? Anything come up for you beyond that?
No, I do think we just deserve leaders who are willing to listen.
Yes. Yes.
And ultimately, I think that's the deepest thing. I think that people want to be heard. They want to be known, and they want to know that you're making an educated decision for them because it's their seat. Government's supposed to work for the people. It's supposed to work to benefit them. And so it really should feel like this dialogue, which is why I try and engage as best as I can and be as accessible as I can. And whether that's via email or social media or putting things out there and just doing a really good job. Usually you'll see me taking notes during public comment of what someone's name is or what their topic was, so that two things, either I can point them in the right direction of the solution, or so that I can have the option to go research what they're saying on my own so I can be more informed.
I think it's important that people realize all the government officials have email.
Yes.
And people can reach out. Because sometimes people say, well, I can't communicate with them. Email. I mean, they could write a letter, but email is much easier.
Mine is really easy. It's Erin at erinreznor.com. Yeah. So if you want to tell Erin Reznor what you think, Erin at erinreznor.com is the easiest way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And when there's government meetings going on, people have the opportunity to show up.
Yeah, man, it's the best thing. Just let your voice be heard. That engagement, I truly believe that elected officials are begging for that engagement. They want to know, at least the ones that I sit up on city council with. Mm-hmm. The ones that I sit on city council with, I know that I can speak and on their behalf and say they want to hear from you. They want to know. We love when someone comes and tells us that there is a problem, not because there's a problem, but because it gives us the opportunity to fix it.
To address
and
it,
I learned that in our Dutch Bros format, that people would say things like, oh, I don't want to complain or any of those sort of things. But I actually firmly believe that you're providing me the opportunity to show you and to demonstrate that I'm here to help.
Yes. Yes.
That I care to fix a problem, that your needs matter, and that government works for you. And so I learned that in Dutch Bros. Anytime a customer, somebody messes up a drink or something like that, it gives us the opportunity to blow their mind because we handle it so well.
Yes, yes. And you know, what's nice is I think just about every community today records the meetings and they're available online if the people can't attend.
Yes, you can watch them on YouTube. You can watch them live. You can watch them on the City of Reading's website. It is actually really great. There are archives. You can go back and look at meetings from years ago.
And oftentimes people say, well, I'm not going to vote because my vote doesn't mean anything. And yet, when I've talked with registrar voters from the past, they'll say some elections were just a few votes. I remember there was a tie in Happy Valley one year, and they have a strategy when there's a tie what they do. I think the registrar voters said they had to draw straws. One vote could have made a difference in who actually ended up in office. So we've got to remind ourselves, it's imperative and critical that we show up and participate. That's how we keep a community healthy.
It's extremely important that we vote. It is oftentimes less than 100 votes. We've seen that a lot in the last decade. But yes, I know a couple of city council races from maybe 10 or 15 years ago where it was less than 10 votes. Wow. that was a decision maker. So your vote really counts in local elections. And in all honesty, your local elections are the ones that impact your daily lives the most.
Yeah.
The average person is not deeply moved and impacted within their daily life with who sits in the White House. Mm-hmm. We think that we are, but the reality is that it doesn't move the needle that much. There are people that it deeply impacts. There Yes. are members of communities that it deeply impacts. But for the entire nation as a whole, the 80%, if you will, it's pretty similar no matter who it is. But in local elections, it really matters. Yes. It really matters. And again, I think that it's because we know what matters for our community and what will work and what won't work. Mm-hmm. And so primaries, we have a very low turnout, and I'm hoping people get to the polls this time.
Yes, that's the encouragement, the invitation, because it's a way of giving your voice, you know, through a ballot. Yeah, sharing your voice. What you think is important.
Yeah, and your voice matters. Yes. It's probably the most important time in which that you can use your voice.
Yes. I want to switch gears here, and we think about Shasta County.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the major challenges from your perspective that Shasta County is facing?
I don't think the people are getting what they deserve or what they're owed or what Shasta County deserves. We should be tackling mental health. We should be ensuring that the justice system has the resources that they need. And we should be focusing on policy decisions that benefit the entire community.
Can you think of a policy decision? Does it come to mind?
Well, I could tell you that, for example, when we had the opportunity to bring millions of dollars here for the True North Project, millions of our taxpayer dollars, like we discussed before, we advocate for local control. We know that what works in rural communities isn't the same thing that works in big cities. And so we had this opportunity to bring millions of dollars back to our community. that we could take these steps towards systemic problems that we have here, like we discussed. Yeah. We have very high ACEs scores, addiction, high suicide rates. We have acute mental health crises that are just burdening our medical providers and our emergency departments and our law enforcement. And we had this opportunity. And my opponent wrote a letter of opposition and worked in opposition towards that True North project that would have been generation changing. It is once in a lifetime money that could have come in. And honestly, I believe that that was truly a slap in the face to these desperate families. I will tell you, one of the things that is most moving during public comment has been families sharing what they're going through, and they're desperate for help. They're desperate for resources. Mm-hmm. This would have been a project that would have provided those resources. We have real problems. We have friends who commute back and forth to UC Davis because we don't have any specialty pediatric care here. Yes. We have real needs, and that should be our focus. And our goal should be collaboration and education so that we can make wise votes and honestly go to the, I'd be advocating at the state like, hey, we have real problems. Give us back our taxpayer dollars so that we can change what the future of our community looks like.
Yes. On that True North project, what happened?
You mean in them not being awarded the money? Yeah. In the True North project, they were not awarded the money by the state. The state is looking for stability. Because the county is really this extension of the state. So the state creates policies and laws and what have you and creates funding. And then it flows down into the counties and flows through the county. So they're the provider of certain services. And they're the conduit or the financial arm. And the state's looking for stability. And the state's not going to send millions, tens of millions of dollars to a community that doesn't have support from its board.
Yeah.
Or especially to a community where its board of supervisors are actively working against solutions.
Yes. That relationship with the state is imperative for a county like the Board of Supervisors, because you want to collaborate even when you disagree. You still have to collaborate, hopefully.
You have to be able to. We live in a very blue state, and there is a supermajority who makes decisions in Sacramento, and you have to be able to get your foot in the door to have a conversation to explain to them why it is that it's important what's happening in a rural red county in Northern California. And it's very, very imperative that we have people who can work as leaders, who can work with others, because we should be going to all of our other rural counties and saying, what are our collective needs and how do we advocate for those things? We shouldn't be someone who's who's running opposition.
Yes. And you know, that advocacy, recognizing the needs of Shasta County, like you're talking about mental health and having those adverse childhood experience scores so high, highest in the state, higher than the nation. I mean, that's a good way to lobby that this organization, True North Project, should be in Shasta County because of the vast need.
Yeah, it was a locked facility. Anyone who was coming from outside of the county would be here in a locked facility, get the needs, their resources and needs met, and then be shipped back to the community that they came from, which is what we're doing now. Yes. We're sending children and young adults and grown adults to other counties and other communities. That is a break. When someone has a mental health crisis and we're attempting to make sure they have all of their needs, that's a difficult situation. Not everyone can travel somewhere else if they need to go down for some sort of treatment with their member of their family.
Yes.
And we really had such an opportunity here. But I think I believe in this community, and I believe that this community is really good at finding solutions. And I believe that we will be able to move forward and find different and other solutions. And that's just going to take more work.
Plus, I think it's important to recognize the need and to go after things that provide the resources to fulfill those needs.
Yep. It really matters that we know what those needs are, and then that we can advocate for them.
Yes.
Can we identify them, and then we can advocate for them? Specifically, within the justice system, I will say, we have this revolving door of whether that is the DA's office not having enough staffing for the amount of cases that they're attempting to weed through and decide what to prosecute, whether that is the sheriff having the resources that he needs within jail facilities or deputies, or whether that is parole, and do they have the services and the needs that it's this entire system,
yes,
that at the moment feels like it's being choked from resources. And there very clearly appears to be a political game that is playing when you watch presentations from various departments. There appears to be serious favoritism that occurs. And that's just unacceptable, because the justice system specifically needs to serve our entire community.
Yes.
I think that public safety is a pillar of government. If we were to go down, what are our basic needs that the government is supposed to be providing? Public safety is one of those. Yeah. And so victims deserve to have advocates, and they deserve to have this situation where their families are not languishing because it's taking so long for the system to do its actual job.
Yes.
And it really is just because it's bogged down. I think we have incredible members of the law enforcement community trying to do their very best with very limited resources.
Yeah. And, you know, the sheriff's department, which is responsible for the operation of the jail, if you only have limited space, you're going to incarcerate the most threatening of offenders.
I feel for anyone who was part of the decision-making process of who stays and who goes.
That's horrible, isn't it?
That's a rough job to weed through and make a decision on that.
Yes. I'm going to shift gears a little bit, because I want to make sure we get through the questions that we have for all the candidates.
Yes.
Do you think there's voter fraud transpiring across our nation or locally in our community as well?
Attempting to say that a system that has millions of players within it has zero bad actors seems foolish, right?
Yeah.
Right? You and I cannot say that in a group of millions of people, I cannot say that everyone is perfect. So that feels foolish to say there's absolutely no one who is a bad actor or making a wrong decision. However, I also think that the flip side is true. To have the idea that every elections official in every county across the nation is part of some deep scheme would mean that one group was always winning. And I think that that's the piece that I've pointed to over and over again, is that it doesn't seem congruent. It seems like we raise these concerns, and I'm not sure which elections it is that we're attempting to say are the ones that are fraudulent. Is there fraud? I'm sure there's fraud somewhere. Like I said, there are millions of actors. So is there probably a bad actor somewhere in there? I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure there are millions of bad actors. But I have a really hard time when I'm picking through. Like, was 2022, was that one not fraudulent? And 2020 was? When which election, like which ones?
Yes.
Because there's just so much diversity in who's winning and who's losing in which counties that I have a hard time pointing to anything.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think there's nothing, but. Yeah.
And there's a lot of checks and balances to prevent that. And I do know that if the Registrar of Voters here, Elections Office, picks up on something, it goes over to the District Attorney's Office to investigate. It isn't just, you know, let go. So that makes a huge difference.
I remember in 2022, one of the reasons why it took them so long to get the votes out had to do with the amount of people that they were calling and checking. Mm-hmm. So it was something they had identified that didn't match the way it was supposed to.
Yes.
And that they were calling and checking
following
with someone.
Up.
Yeah, that yeah. they were following up.
Yes, yes.
I don't remember what the number was, but yeah. I remember that was the first time that I had experienced yeah. that.
They look out for our voting system to keep it legit. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Shasta County Elections. It is presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I'm Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Erin Reznor. She is a candidate for the Shasta County Board of Supervisors for District 1, currently serving on the Redding City Council. And so why would you encourage people to vote for you? Why do you... What would you say?
Because we deserve better. We truly do. We truly deserve someone who is willing to listen, someone who's going to make facts and database decisions, someone who is going to advocate for mental health, someone who is going to ensure that the justice system has the resources that it needs, and someone who's going to be able to collaborate and move forward the ideas and the initiatives that we have within our community. Because that hasn't been occurring. And there have been these pet projects and focuses that are not benefiting our entire community. And to be totally honest, when Kurt Swanson decided to leave the race, I thought that was such a sad scenario that our community was going to miss out on an opportunity of someone who I thought could make a really great leader and yeah. who volunteered to serve this community. And he left because of the vitriolic nature of politics here. And I think that you know cerebrally what you're getting into, but you don't physically know until yeah. you're in the middle of it. And that left only 6 months before the election. And I knew that we had the ability to stand up a race because it was going to be a really heavy lift for anybody who volunteered, anybody who stood up and said, I'm willing to serve, that it was going to be a heavy lift to raise money and to get their name out there. But I knew that we could do it. And I knew that I could go to people within our community and that our community would band together and stand up.
Yes. You know, when you think of the reputation the Shasta County Board of Supervisors meetings has.
Yes.
And in some ways it's quieted down and then it'll raise, and you have some outrageous behaviors.
Yes.
You know, you talked about emotional expression is welcome. Yep. Outrageous behaviors, not welcome. So when you think of that task of that tone of the meetings and the stuff that's been going on, yet you decided you were still drawn to be a candidate because you thought it was important for someone to stand up.
I did. I thought it was important for someone to stand up. There has to be somebody who's sitting up there who is able to recognize and has perspective of what families within this community are really facing. Yesterday, my husband sent me a picture from the gas pump, and it was $7 for gas.
Wow.
That's absurd. And like we discussed before, we have friends who are driving to Sacramento back and forth because we yeah. don't have any specialized pediatric care. We have nurses in the emergency department and law enforcement who are tired.
Yeah.
They're just tired. And I will be a person who tackles real issues. You're not going to see me give myself a 60% raise. You are going to see me tackle real issues.
I think that's imperative. Do you think it's important to have a good working relationship with state government?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like I said, rural communities are adversely impacted by decisions that are making at the state. And we have a more difficult time going to the state and putting in for things like grants and those sort of things that could really benefit us and could help us. We just don't have the same amount of resources that they do in a bigger community.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that you have the ability to work together and that you have the ability to share your message clearly and well, because if someone doesn't want to even let you in the door to have a conversation, how are you going to advocate for the needs of your community?
Yeah.
You have to be a really great collaborator, which is probably one of my strongest assets. I am an incredible collaborator with people who I disagree with and people who I agree with, because I truly think that it benefits all people when we find that common ground. Yes. When we find some way to work together, it really benefits our entire community.
Absolutely. And that's hopefully our elected officials, their positions so that they can bring resources to our area. And having a respectful relationship with the state, that you're willing to also build a relationship with people you've just come in contact with, but that tone of respect and the tone of collaboration makes all the difference in the resources that come to the county.
Absolutely. It really does. We have to be able to advocate so that we can get it funneled down here.
Yes. So if you're elected, when you make decisions as a supervisor, who determines your decision? What's in your decision?
Like I said, I'm a data and facts geek person. So I'm looking at what's best for our community as a whole. I'm looking at what the data and the facts say.
The research?
Yes, I am looking at the research. And then I'm also considering any sort of experts within that field or topic. For instance, we discussed the jail. If experts who interface with the jail are coming and presenting facts or opinions or perspective, I'm also considering those. Like I said, circling all the way back to my CASA days, one of the things I think is most important is having perspective from boots on the ground. So whoever that is, in whatever space, I'm also considering their expert insight.
Yes.
And perspective.
I think, you know, you have to, hopefully have to, because our own perspective can be very limited. So listening to experts and getting the feedback and research versus what we might think ourselves is very critical in making a decision.
I firmly believe that if I think I'm the smartest person in the room, that I'm in the wrong room.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
I think so. I think that I'm the smartest, best person in the entire room, then I have surrounded myself with the wrong people and I need to get other people, because that's how you make good decisions. I need to get other people in the room who have good perspective and expert knowledge and are going to bring me all the facts and the data and the research so I can make a very informed decision.
Yes. Yes. I think it's imperative. So does any particular organization influence you?
No particular sort of organization. I would say, and similarly that I said, for instance, the sheriff's department would likely influence me if we were talking about jail space or maybe.
But you're your own person.
Yeah. For the benefit of everyone who is my friend, I think it's probably difficult that I'm a rather independent thinker. It used to be difficult on CSAC sometimes because we would be so much in agreement that I would want to vote. If it wasn't on record, I might vote just in the opposite direction so that there could be a little bit of
juice.
A little bit of juice and a little bit of not turmoil, but just a little bit of difference there so that we could have perspective and we weren't all in unison. Like I said, I firmly believe that if we were all the same, it would be so boring.
Yes.
So I really am an independent person. And I think that someone would say that for probably anyone who knew me for my entire life.
The reason I ask that question is because sometimes you hear people in our community saying, oh, this organization is controlling this elected individual.
That does exist sometimes. Yeah. I've witnessed that on my time in city council. I've witnessed electeds who were like that, and I've witnessed electeds who weren't like that at all. I got really great advice from a former mayor when I was running in 2018. And he said to me, there were going to be, I'll call them puppeteers or power players or influencers, who are going to right off the bat attempt to push you in one direction or another. And if you let them have any sort of sway, they're going to attempt to do that for your entire term. And I remember thinking, that's so funny. I don't know who would attempt to do that. And it happened. It happened within the first 6 months. And
interesting.
They learned right away that it didn't work. And that I was an independent thinker. And that I was not going to be bossed around. I think that anyone in childhood would probably laugh if they if they were like, Aaron Reznor being bossed around. Oh, wow.
Can't imagine that, huh?
No. No. And honestly, then they just stop. So I don't really experience... I don't really experience that, even that attempt of people trying to influence me to one direction or another direction. Community members, those are the people who I'm listening to, people in our community, people who are emailing saying, hey, I have a concern.
Which is a reminder and invitation to reach out to elected officials, talk to them by email, show up at council or Board of Supervisors meetings, you know, or you can look at it online. There's lots of different opportunities to be engaged in the process and to vote. There's about 1 minute left.
Yes.
Anything that you wish to communicate to larger community that we have not touched upon that you think is critical for them to know?
They just deserve someone who is going to listen to them. They deserve someone who's going to tackle actual issues. They deserve someone who understands what it is that families are going through and what the problems within this community actually are, and someone who is solution focused.
Solution focused is important, don't you think?
Solution focused. We're doing that at the City of Reading. We're bringing in a third party firm to come in and find where are we efficient and where are we inefficient and how can we be better. And I'd love to do that at the county.
Yes. Yes. If someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach out to
Aaron at AaronReznor.com, or you can find me. You can just type in Aaron Reznor on Instagram or Facebook, and you can send me a direct message that way also.
I think it's important that listeners recognize there's an invitation specifically from her to reach out to her. If you have questions or input.
Please.
Yes. Yes. Good. So I want to thank Aaron. Aaron Reznor, she is the candidate for District 1, Shasta County Board of Supervisors. She's running against Kevin Cry and Richard Gallardo. And it's important. We want to have you show up and vote. This has been a segment of Shasta County Elections presented by KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host, a licensed marriage and family therapist. I hope that you heard from Aaron and from myself that it's critical that we engage in the process, educate ourselves, and participate. Give our elected officials feedback. Vote. It's critical to our health and well-being of our community. I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you, Aaron Reznor.
Thank you so much.
Go out and vote.
Please vote.